Welcome to the nara.org.au podcast. I'm your host, Baron Hansen, and we are recording live at Triple U Studios in Nara CBD. What is the nara.org.au podcast? It is a series and collection of stories of the people and characters who make up the fabric of this town of Nara.
Welcome to the final episode of season one of the nara.org.au podcast. And if you're wondering why it's a different person behind the microphone, it's because we are turning the tables on Baron, who you've heard behind the mic this whole time, and we're putting him on the other side of the microphone and asking him the questions for this final episode. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your story and putting the questions to you that you've been putting to so many of us in this season. So the first question is, what do you think is the most underrated thing about Nara that people always get wrong?
This whole process has been quite enjoyable because this is, yeah, as we've said, the final episode of the season, and I've been asking all of our guests these questions and really like reflecting on what each person has said, but then I now have to come up with my own unique one. Yes. As well. So I'm kind of like, it's kind
you
of hard.
You can't steal somebody else's.
Yeah. And the themes that have come up for this question have been a lot around the environment and that Nara is just a place you drive through to get to other places. But for me, one thing I've really noticed, and I moved back to Nara after being away for 14 years. I moved back from New York City to Nara. So huge contrast. Mm. And one of the most refreshing things, or one of the most underrated things I think about Nara, is that the people who live here are just so authentic.
Mm.
And it's actually one of the things that we end up using for our key core principles or core values of nara.org.au was authenticity. And it was really refreshing to come back here. And even, you know, traveling up to Sydney or going to other places, there's a lot of people who are trying to be something that maybe they're not, or they think they should be, because that's how they've grown up. And what I find in Nara is a lot of people just doing the thing that they want to do.
Yeah.
And that has been really refreshing.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. I know I'm not supposed to probably pipe in with my story because I've already had my turn. but I do remember backpacking overseas and then coming back and it was freezing cold and we went to Bunnings and we bought like the cheapest heater there. I think it was like $20 or $40 or something. And the lady said, "That'll be $200, thanks." Or "That'll be $200, thanks." And we looked at each other and then we just had forgotten about that sense of humor. And, you know, we just looked at each other and cracked up laughing and went, "Oh, it's good to be home." And just, yeah, that authenticity is so refreshing. And it would have been such a stark contrast from New York, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, you are as Nara as you can get. I've keen to hear, for everyone, if they haven't already, to hear about how far you go back and your grandfather's origin story. But what is your earliest memory of the town? How did you end up in Nara?
Yeah, so origin of the Hansen family. On my great-grandmother's side, it's much long, goes back further, but the Hansen was 1870s, around the time of the gold rush in Yowal. The Hansen family arrived as Johansons from Sweden. Johansson, just my great-great-grandfather, and he ended up out at Yowal and had a very successful gold mine. And so my name is Baron Hansen, and out at Yowal there's Hansen Hill, and next to it is Baron Mountain.
Wow.
And that's because my great-great-grandmother was Elizabeth Baron, who was the Baron family who had the biggest gold mine, and the Hansen family had the second biggest gold mine.
Wow.
But the family law, the myth of our family is none of that wealth. Like, we're not a gold mining family. Like, we don't live in gold houses or ride a Rolls Royce. is that my great great grandfather lost all of the gold somehow? He was known to be a gambler, but he was also lost his mind a little bit in his older age. And there's some family myth that the Hansen family wealth is still buried out at Grassy Gully somewhere, you know, four paces back from where the old house was, three to the left kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
so you went out there with a shovel as a kid?
And so there has been some expeditions, but no success that we know of yet. So yeah, my earliest memory of growing up in the Shoalhaven or growing up in Nowra, I think just reflecting back on being a kid here was the amount of time that we spent in nature, and particularly growing up around the river. So the river was such a central part of our lifestyle, and swimming in the river, jumping off trees, jumping off rocks, long summer days on canoes and boogie boards and all that kind of stuff, and the river really being a central theme of us growing up as kids.
And that kind of feeds into the next question as well about what was it like as a kid growing up in Nowra? And for you, it sounds like it was very much being outdoors and taking advantage of everything that nature had to offer.
Yeah, and you know, I've just had a child. Like, we have an infant at home, and just reflecting on how that, the ability for us to access nature is so abundant here. You know, we only have to walk outside and we're already amongst the bush and the trees, and so much of Nowra, like even the top of Nowra, is you just go a few steps and you're at Ben's Walk, right? Yep. And it's incredibly abundant rainforest and just this beautiful sandstone rocks, and I think that has been the biggest thing to come through when people are reflecting about Nowra, is that we are surrounded by so much abundant nature. Mm. And so, yeah, growing up as a kid, lots of time in nature, lots of bushwalks, going out to the beach. I think also too, when I was growing up, sport was a really big part of our identity. My dad was the president of the Nowra Cricket Club, and I played AFL for the Nowra Blues, and my parents dedicated a lot of time to volunteering for those community groups, and mum played basketball and tennis, and so, you know, we were just part of those sporting groups and that community, and I think that really grew our friendship circle, and all of our friends and family from that era were all part of those clubs.
So what do you think's changed, if anything, from Nowra since growing up? And it sounds like Rosie loves the outdoors as much as you. I know you've said you've throw in the backpack and go for a hike and that sort of thing. Are people still doing what you did as a kid?
Yeah, I think this has been an interesting subject that has come up continually, because a lot of the people we've had on the podcast are all community focused and community minded people. It's just the kind of people who we had on the podcast for season one. And a lot of them are saying that the drive or the core of their organizations just aren't there anymore. People aren't showing up like they used to, right? Yeah. And then people are choosing to spend more time inside, or people are feeling more pressure that they don't actually have that luxury time to go and volunteer somewhere. And so, like, things like cost of living, things like just this squeeze or this comparison culture that we might get from social media has meant that not as many people are showing up for things. And I think it's a big part of why I was so passionate about this Nowra.org.au podcast. It's like, how do we get people to show up?
Yeah.
How do we create the environment so people are inspired to rock up and volunteer or join a organization? And you only have to listen back to this whole season of this podcast, and there's so many to choose from. You know, you can go and join the local youth organization. There's community cricket games happening. There's ways to kind of be involved with be involved with the local, like we did a Clean Up Australia Day. You know, there's so many different ways that you can really be part of the community. And I think that is what I hope comes out of this project as well, and what we can change.
Taking pride in our community. So way back when you decided to leave Nowra, what do you think was kind of the catalyst in making you want to leave and explore other things?
Yeah, so I went to Nowra High and had a pretty good experience there. I mean, you don't really know what your experience is because it's the only one you had, but I enjoyed school. But I think I had a pretty negative perception of Nowra as a teenager. I think like growing up as a kid, abundant nature, everything's good, playing sport. But then one of the challenges of being from regional town is that there's a lack of opportunity. Mm. And so naturally, I think I started to maybe be a little bit embarrassed of this place and a little bit embarrassed of saying I'm from Nowra. I remember, you know, going to Sydney and saying, oh, I'm from Jervis Bay or I'm from the Shoalhaven, you know, not wanting to say Nowra out loud. And as I sit here today, I proudly wear my Nowra merch available on the website. But I think that, yeah, that catalyst was like, oh, I want to get out of this place and I'm never going to come back here. Never want to be in Nowra. But I think you have to go away to realize just how good something is, you know, leaving and then coming back. I was like, oh, wow, we have something really special here, but I couldn't appreciate it without that gap in time.
Mm. So did you mean to come back? What brought you back?
I never intended to come back to Nowra, but I think around the time of the 2019-2020 bushfires, that was a huge catalyst and change for me. I'd been living in New York City for 6 years at that point, and my time there was waning. And I think that the lifestyle that I was living was quite unsustainable. That place can really chew you up and spit you out if you're not careful. Mm. And realizing, you know, during that period of 2020, just how far away I was from family and just how precious this place is and just how easily it could have completely been wiped out. And January 4th, the fire maps were predicted to take out our entire neighborhood of Longreach, 62 people. It was meant to take out that whole stretch of the bush, and that fire, had the winds persisted, would have moved into North Nowra and, you know, into Nowra as well. And so watching from New York City in the middle of a snowstorm, you know, refreshing the fire map every couple of hours and checking the winds, checking in on my parents who were waiting to fight that fire at our house. They were going to go jump in the river. That was their plan. Fight until they couldn't anymore and then jump in the river. That was a really harrowing experience. And so that day I just said, I'm going to fly home and help to clean up. You know, I assumed I'd be arriving to complete wreckage. That day the wind changed direction. Kangaroo Valley was hit. There was about 12 homes that were lost that day on that, during that, that on January 4th. But what I did notice was the sense of community and how neighbors were rallying around each other, how people were helping each other. And that was something I hadn't necessarily experienced in New York. I'd lived in an apartment block in Williamsburg in Brooklyn for 3 years, and I didn't know the names of my neighbors who lived above or below me or beside me. You know, so like that for me was like a real eye opener and a real kind of catalyst for saying, hey, this is something that I want to be a part of. And if I'm to have children, if I want to, you know, grow up children somewhere, I want them to be part of a community. And so that was the big shift and the change. It took me 2 years because of COVID to get my act together, sell all my stuff, move out of my apartment, move back, but I finally moved back in 2022.
Yeah, wow. And you found meditation while you were in New York. So what drew you to that and then to eventually setting up Be Here Nowra?
Yes. So meditation was something that I would have never have really considered myself a candidate for. I didn't see any value in it. I'm a person who moves very quickly and moves a lot and does a lot of things, very active person. When I was in New York, I started to realize that meditation was a thing that was a lot of high performers were using. So like human optimization people, people who I looked up to in the world of kind of biohacking, they're all talking about this meditation thing. And I was like, oh, this seems interesting. And I kind of was looking at it. But it was my business partner when I was in New York City who actually found me. And one day I was really hungover and I was sleeping under the desk at work at lunchtime and he kind of came and he just kicked me. He was a few years older and he said, "Hey, mate, you really need to try meditation." And I didn't do any research. I didn't go and Google, like I didn't do anything. I just went Vedic meditation teachers near me because that was the style that he did. And I emailed the guy, had a quick call with him. He said, "Yep, come start next week." Paid him the money, we did the course, and in that was 9 years ago. I've rarely missed a day of meditation since then.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then the journey to kind of setting it up here and be here now.
Yeah.
What was the thought process there?
Yeah, yeah. So about 4 years into my meditation journey, I started to notice, or people started to notice changes in me, right? They started to say like, "Hey, you seem really different." You know, like my mom was a really good example. She's like, "You know, you seem much more calm. You're not all over the place. You know, you're not drinking as much. You know, what's changed?" And I was like, "Oh, I've been doing this meditation thing." And so mom was like, "Oh, I'm going to go learn. Like, is there any teachers?" And there was no teachers in this area. So mom went and learned somewhere else up in the Illawarra. In New York, I was referring a lot of people to other teachers. You know, they'd say, "Oh, you know, I saw you meditating in the middle. I was producing documentary films. I saw you meditating on the lunch break. You know, where did you learn that?" And I'd refer them to people. And so I was like, "Oh, I want to learn how to do this. Like, it could be like a weekend hobby, or like it could be a side hustle that I do, you know, teach people meditation." And I didn't realize it, but the lineage or the tradition that I'd landed in was actually, it's kind of like the gold standard of meditation, and the prerequisites were 2 years just to apply to go to teacher training. And there's a really intense application process. Hundreds of people apply, only a handful get selected. And so I went through this whole process, and when I was going through the process, I was like, "I don't want to teach in New York City and I don't want to live in New York City, but the people of Nowra, they could really use this." And this was just after the bushfires.
Yeah.
And I was like, "This is perfect resilience, because there's going to be more bushfires. There's going to be more change. There's going to be more pandemics. There's going to be more floods. But we can't control that. But what we can control is how we react." And that is ultimately what I got out of meditation, was a resilience, like an ability to adapt in the face of change.
Yeah.
And so that adaptability was like, that's something I want to share here. And then, yeah, 2 years later, after all of that training, all the prerequisites, spent 3 months doing about finishing a 3,000 hour teacher training course to then become a graduate and be accepted into this tradition, which comes from India, and get the permission from the elders in India to be able to teach this and share this in Nowra. Yeah.
And you've got, I mean, I don't know if you want to share your mission as well, but you've got a pretty strong mission in terms of, you know, helping people, particularly in the not-for-profit sector, so they can fill their cup to help others.
Yeah.
Can you share some of your kind of goals in that space?
Yeah, yeah. So when I originally set out to do this project, I wanted to teach 1% of Nowra to meditate. And there's this belief, or we see this in science, it's like the few that lead the many. And we see this if you ever see like a flock of swallows, about 1% of the birds are leading the rest of them. In our heart, we have these pacemaker cells, about 1% of our cells in our heart keep the rest of the heart in rhythm. And there's this science that says that if you can have 1% of a population de-exciting the nervous system, it actually has an effect on the entire group, right? And that we know that in science, we exist in a collective consciousness, that we are one human organism that is affected by every single individual nervous system of that organism. Just like in the body, how each cell affects the body, each human body affects our big human nervous system. And so the whole idea or the premise comes from this scientific studies that says, it's called the coherence effect, that if we can get enough people meditating a critical mass, it has a flow-on effect on things like crime rates. It has a flow-on effect on happiness. It has an effect on accidents and things like this. So my goal was to come back, teach 1% of Nowra to meditate, which is about 300 people. I've been doing this for 4 years, and I'll continue to do it long into the future. But the whole goal was to try and find those people who are willing to do the practice, teach them how to do the practice, and allow them to be self-sufficient. So give them all the tools to have a practice that they can do on their own.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how have the community embraced it?
Yeah, I think, so my background, I went to Wollongong Uni when I first left Nowra, and I did PR and marketing. So I kind of have a background in like how to create events and things like this and share things, you know, in a way. And when I was in New York, that's what I was doing. I was doing PR and marketing, but specifically for social justice causes and making the world a better place through storytelling. And when I finished teacher training, I moved back here to Nowra, and I threw a big event, which I basically invited every single person I'd ever met in Nowra and more. I got on the radio stations, like Triple U got me on the station here. I was on ABC. I was like all over everywhere. And I invited everybody to come to L Horses for like an intro talk. And so when a lot of people start meditation teaching, they go out and they start talking to a few people. They start, you know, teaching their mum and dad and their sister to meditate. I had like 90 people rock up to my first intro talk, which is like unheard of. Yeah, you know, it was it was quite a big event, and it was pissing down rain that night as well. So, you know, I had this event and it started to create a bit of buzz. And what I felt in that was that people actually do want to change. They don't know where to start. And I think to make positive, lasting community change, we have to start with each individual. And what meditation does, it gives people a tool to start that process. It doesn't fix all the problems in your life. It doesn't solve the community's problems, but it's something that you can do for yourself that adds and adds and adds up over time, and you start to have more resilience, adaptability. You have more capability to then share whatever your personal gift is for the community.
Which is probably a good segue back to nowra.org.au, because it's about amplifying those good things, and we're not going to be able to fix everything and make it perfect, but we can definitely talk about the good things that are happening and amplifying those voices. So
I might just touch on that for a second, because the nowra.org.au project has been such a beautiful like evolution of Be Here Nowra for me, because you know, and I'm still working on both at the same time, but the Nowra project, like that, the Be Here Nowra project was always about, you know, making Nowra a better place and amplifying like the, you know, the good things that are happening here. And I've been making a documentary about it as well. And so when this nowra.org.au project started to bubble up, I was like, wow, this is an opportunity to share these great things that are happening. And it's just worked so cohesively. And, you know, so many of the guests that we've had on already in season one have learned to meditate, you know, and so there's this crossover. And I think that happens in regional towns, right? We have this ability to cross-pollinate, which doesn't happen in places like New York City, where you can be doing this project but also be involved in with this project, and also shop at the local organic store and the local Indian restaurant, and it's all connected. That is community.
Exactly. Has there been a moment in Nowra that has left a lasting impression on you?
So that intro talk was in the rain at L Horses, 90 people rocking up to hear what I had to say was like really heartwarming to come back, to be invited back. And I think like you go away and I think you learn different things, and people are genuinely interested to see what you've learned and what you've brought back. So that was definitely one of them. And then another one of those was when we launched nowra.org.au. We had a party here at the Shoalhaven Gallery, Regional Gallery, and we had a DJ and we had food, and to see the amount of diverse community that turned out for that day. And it was a really good reminder that people in Nowra do want to change. And by being that catalyst, or being that the people who can provide the vessel for them, that was really inspiring. So I think like for me, what is most inspiring is when people show up.
Yeah.
You know, I think that has been a common theme throughout this podcast season one, has been just show up. If you want these things to happen, if you want community, you have to be part of the community. You can't just expect them and rock up. You have to go and volunteer. You have to come up and show up or show your appreciation or share the event or bring a friend, you know. And so that has been a huge part. And if people continue to do that, I think that'll be like a really awesome outcome of this project.
Hopefully they all show up for your meditation festival later this year. Yeah. You can gather even more. Once what? So what do you hope that Nowra feels like in 10 years? And I'm conscious that you've heard a lot of responses over this season. So maybe you want to second somebody else's to this, or maybe you've got your own that vision for the next 10 years for Nowra.
Yeah. This has been I have loved this question, and people have approached it from every angle so far in season one. And I'm looking forward to doing a bit of a summary of them all and seeing, what was the common themes. But for me, I think it's more of a feeling, and it's a feeling of pride. You know, if people are proud to say they're from Nowra, and this is healing my own teenage wounds, I guess, or teenage negativity that was there. You know, I left this town because I wasn't very proud to call Nowra my home. Yeah. And so I think that if in 10 years, my daughter will be 11 in 10 years time, if she can say that she's proud to be from Nowra, or, in her 20s, 30s, that she's proud to say that she's from Nowra, I think that we've done a good job. And that's part of what we've done with this branding, right? We've created a common theme around Nowra. And pride doesn't have to be like stuck up either, or it doesn't have to be like puffing your chest out. Like, I think humble pride as well. And even in the way that we worked with a branding agency to come up with the Nowra.org logo, it's hand cut. That's not it's not these like solid shapes. There's a little bit of roughness to it. And to be proud of that and humbly proud, I think is part of what I'd like to see in 10 years time. More pride, more community pride.
And then the final question is, any asks of the people of Nowra?
Any asks of the people of Nowra? Yeah, I have two asks. So the first one is if you are curious about meditation, that you come and have a chat to me, because meditation isn't for everybody, but it does have benefits that are far and wide reaching if you do the practice. And I think fundamentally how we are going to make change is it starts with each individual. And you can't have a green forest without green trees. And so that we need each individual doing their part. And one of the biggest issues I see out there is that there's a lot of well-intentioned people, but they're trying to do things from a place of stress. And when we're doing things from a place of stress, we can't be our best. We can't give as much as we could give, and we make mistakes. We can't see the bigger picture. And so, I teach people how to relax their nervous system and be able to show up in a with a wider perspective, essentially. And so if you're interested and curious about meditation, come see me. Or we now have, as of the next month, we'll have 5 meditation teachers in Nowra. So by the time this podcast comes out, my wife is a teacher. There's a teacher from the army, Lauren. There's another teacher who works at the parachute school. And there's another person who's just completing their training who works for Boeing. And so we have a diverse range of teachers now. It's important that you find a teacher that you like and have a connection with. But come and have a chat and see whether meditation might be right for you. The second ask is nowra.org.au. So a project that you and I are super passionate about. It's get involved. It's come sign up for our mailing list. Check out the website, follow us on Instagram. We're going to continue to share amazing events that are happening. We're going to continue to throw our own events. We're going to continue to help build the community up and give you the tools to be community leaders and do your own thing. And that takes people showing up. And so, show up, share it with your friends, buy a t-shirt, wear the hat, and be proud of what we're doing here in Nowra.
Absolutely. Well, Baron, it's been so much fun turning the tables on you and learning things that even I didn't know about all kinds of buried treasure in your history. And I absolutely can't wait to not only hear all of these episodes, but to hear what you've got in store for season two as well. So thank you so much for putting together the nowra.org.au podcast and amplifying all of these amazing stories.
Thanks, Gemma. This has been really fun. Thank you for listening to the nowra.org.au podcast. I'm your host, Baron Hansen. We're recording in Triple U Studios in Nowra CBD. It's a community radio station. Our producer here is Paul Murphy. Nowra.org.au is funded by the New South Wales Government Uptown Accelerator Program. If you'd like more information, visit nowra.org.au or follow us on socials, subscribe to the mailing list. See you next time.